For South Carolina Public Radio and Sonatas and Soundscapes, I'm Bradley Fuller. It's as true for orchestras as it is for individuals. Adversity often reveals hidden strengths, or at least brings them into sharper relief. For South Carolina Philharmonic Music Director Morihiko Nakahara, the challenges posed by the pandemic made even clearer just the kind of talent, leadership, and community that the orchestra under his baton possesses. Recently, Morihiko spoke with me via remote interview and filled me in on his decision to renew his contract with the orchestra through 2025, as well as the ways the performing arts organization has adapted in response to the pandemic and the works he's looking forward to conducting in the 2021-2022 season. Here's the conversation we had. Morihiko, thanks so much for speaking today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Now, you just renewed your contract with the South Carolina Philharmonic through 2025?
That is correct, yeah.
Was that an easy decision to make?
It was, you know, and it sounds a little bit ironic in some ways, you know, how we were and have been able to cope with and pivot around the pandemic actually played a role in it, in some ways, right? Because during the pandemic, what cemented my decision was the great team we have at the staff level, the great board leadership, the committed musicians who are really bought into, you know, into what we do, and then the whole sense of community as well. So, you know, it was sort of an easy decision for me in that sense, because I'm sure a lot of people, you know, they weren't sure how we would fare during the pandemic season. And it was definitely, you know, difficult. You know, we couldn't put as big of an orchestra as we typically do and we would like to do, because of the distancing and, you know, budgetary uncertainties and all of those things. And yet, you know, in some ways I feel like we've made some great strides artistically, and you know, we were able to kind of go into the whole realm of live streaming, as well as having live audiences. And, you know, so in a lot of ways, our reach as an organization actually expanded and increased during the pandemic. And so, you know, when the conversation came, it was really a no-brainer, you know, on my part.
And you mentioned there were live streams of concerts, a few of which I watched, I believe, two performances of some concerts to allow for the audience, as you said, to space out. And there were even some events around at different community locations, the baseball stadium, I think, and a few other venues.
Yeah, so a lot of, and again, you know, it's, I think we were fortunate that so many things, so many different pieces of the puzzle just kind of fell into the right place. One is the, you know, the beautiful weather that we tend to have in the Southeast, that allowed us to be able to do some of these, you know, chamber ensemble performances outdoors, at places where, you know, we haven't really gone frequently in the past. So, you know, the out in, near the Owens Field, you know, the Hunter Gatherer, the hangar space out there, you know, that's kind of the alternative locations that, you know, I've been wanting to, you know, get us in. And so, you know, that was very popular. A lot of the historic gardens around the downtown area, as well as places like Saluda Shoals, and you know, you mentioned Segra Park. You know, Segra Park, we started doing these chamber ensemble performances in the fall, last fall, and then we kind of took a break when it got a little too cold, you know, and then kind of we picked that back again in the spring when it got warmer. But you know, in the case of Segra Park, that conversation or those activities then led to something we have been talking about for 5 years, ever since that park opened and the Fireflies came into town, was to do, you know, like a 4th of July weekend, big patriotic concert with, you know, with fireworks. So that sort of, you know, that idea really came to, you know, picked up steam, and it was a beautiful day, you know, on the 3rd of July, with over, you know, 5,000 people in attendance. So, you know, again, so it's, you know, again, there's a lot of things that, you know, many of us orchestras and performing arts organizations around the country, we had to do some sort of unorthodox things to keep the music alive, so to speak. And you know, as great as streaming and these virtually recorded things are, people really crave that, the live interaction with music and musicians. So you know, in order to do that safely, these outdoor, you know, with smaller groups, with small, you know, small audience, spaced out, was the way to go. They were all so popular that, you know, we will be continuing on with these activities, you know, this coming fall as well.
And speaking about the future, if you don't mind, I was wondering if you could provide kind of an overview of the orchestra's 2021-2022 season. I mean, especially these, you know, kind of the core of what the Philharmonic does, these Saturday night performances, a lineup of 6 concerts, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, going forward for the upcoming season, so we, you know, we're starting in October. So it's sort of back to quote normal, I guess, in a way, with the series of 6 concerts. But again, because of the certain unknowns, right, with the pandemic, we decided to keep the first 2 concerts relatively small. So, you know, like 50 musicians or 45 musicians or so, kind of focusing on sort of the classical early romantic repertoire, or, you know, chamber orchestra repertoire in a sense. The reason for that is, you know, just in case something happens where, you know, we might have to socially distance again on stage, you know, we can then easily pivot. We can, you know, if we plan a concert for like 80 musicians in October as a grand opening, as, you know, reopening in a sense, which, you know, which sounds great, but then, you know, what if then we have to distance on stage and we might not be able to fit everybody. So this is sort of, you know, strategic decision on our part. So, the first concert is built around the Mendelssohns. And I say that because the main piece is the Scottish Symphony by Felix Mendelssohn. But then we are opening the concert and, you know, opening the season really by a piece by his sister, Fanny Mendelssohn Hansel, one of the few orchestral pieces that she wrote during her lifetime, which is Overture in C major. So that's what we're opening with. So those are sort of the bookends for that first concert. The second concert is built around the Mozart's Symphony No. 40, the famous G minor symphony. We're opening with the Brandenburg Concerto No. 6, featuring 2 of our violists from the orchestra in the solo role. And then doing the Shostakovich first piano concerto with my friend and colleague, pianist Gio Fonsato.
And I should add there, that name will be familiar to anyone who follows the Spoleto Festival USA, yep, Chamber Music Series very closely.
Exactly. Yeah, he's I think he was just there this summer.
He was
as well. Yeah.
Enjoyed speaking with him.
Yeah.
And hearing, of course.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I had the honor of teaching with him at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. He's on the piano faculty here, and you know, I conduct the orchestra and teach conducting. So we've gotten to know each other quite well. When we had him come and play the Gershwin concerto a few seasons ago, and you know, this time we're doing the Shostakovich first, which, you know, as you know, has the, of course, it's a piano concerto, but then it has a obbligato sort of a secondary solo instrument, and that's the trumpet with the string orchestra. And so it's, you know, it's a great way for us to highlight James Ackley, who is our principal trumpet player, as well as the professor of trumpet at the University of South Carolina School of Music. Incidentally, we were at Cincinnati, University of Cincinnati, CCM together for grad school way back. So it's great. And you'll kind of see that narrative or the theme throughout the season too, is that, you know, we're featuring soloists who are from within the orchestra. So, you know, they're members of the Philharmonic who will be taking the solo spotlight, you know, as well as music written by sort of local composers, local to Colombia. So we have a set of new vocal pieces that Dick Goodwin is writing for the big American concert in February, as well as I'm very excited to for us to be the first orchestra to play also the orchestral version of a piece by David Kirkland Garner, who is on composition faculty at the University of South Carolina as well, his piece called Melt, which was a chamber piece. And, you know, I just loved the original version, and he was looking for opportunities to kind of expand it into an orchestral setting. And so, you know, I said, let's do that, you know, let's do that for this season. So you'll see that sort of the common thread, you know, throughout the season. And then along the way, I have mentioned of Mendelssohn, Mozart, other, you know, big, sort of the big war horses of, I don't know if you still use that term, or, you know, the sort of the,
I do. Very,
yeah, you know, the standard symphonic, you know, pieces like the Beethoven Seventh Symphony.
Which would be part of your annual Beethoven and Blue Jeans.
Blue Jeans program, you know, as well as Brahms Fourth Symphony, Scheherazade by Rimsky-Korsakov, you know, and so on. So as we get into winter and spring, you know, we kind of, I don't know, it might be just the optimistic thinking on our part as to what the pandemic is going to do. But, you know, the idea is for these concerts to feature, you know, larger orchestras as the season sort of, you know, progresses. You know, another thing that sort of came out of the pandemic, well, I mean, it was not directly related to the pandemic, but, you know, a year ago, or the summer of 2020, you know, along with the pandemic and the shutdown and so on, we also saw, you know, Black Lives Matter movement and orchestras, other performing arts organizations, but orchestras, you know, in particular, you know, thinking really hard about the concept of diversity, inclusion, you know, equity in programming, right? So, you know, and that was sort of our emphasis last season as well. You know, we did music by William Grant Still, George Walker, Jesse Montgomery, you know, Reese Esmail, James Lee III, who was my high school classmate, and so on. You know, and also we did the Harp Concerto by Tyler Fair. So, you know, it was sort of trying to sort of highlight the contributions, both from the past and ongoing current contributions, these amazing contributions by composers of color, women composers, and so on. You know, that emphasis is, you know, still continuing into this, you know, this upcoming season as well. So in particular, I'm excited about, in February, we're doing, and it's a piece I've always wanted to program and conduct, and I just hadn't, for, you know, one reason or another, before, was the Afro-American Symphony, which is Symphony Number 1, by William Grant Still. And, you know, it was supposed to be, I think initially, when the pandemic started, we had already done the plans for 2020-21 season, and this piece was on that. And then, of course, we had to kind of scrap the whole season, start from the scratch, in a way, to reschedule everything and sort of accommodate for smaller orchestras for most of the season last year. So, planning for this upcoming season, I knew that the particular program that I had in mind for February of 2021 initially would definitely make it into, you know, a bulk of it was going to make it into the plans for the February 2022, you know, program as well. So, you know, it's very exciting. There's a young composer, Carlos Simon, who is now become the officially, I think he's the composer in residence at the Kennedy Center, just starting this fall. And he has this virtuosic, powerful piece, and it's quite short. He just packs a lot into this piece, and it's called Fate Now Conquers. And it's a piece that's directly inspired by Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. So when we do the Beethoven Blue Jeans in January, we'll open in that concert with this piece by Carlos Simon that I think is, you know, will make a powerful impact on both the listeners as well as, you know, as well as those of us on stage.
It seems like a really perfect pairing there. I mean, especially given the direct source of inspiration, I have to wonder when you're balancing these programs, whether it's along lines of local performers or guest artists, contemporary pieces, or these very long-standing, long-venerated compositions, maybe the balance between a warhorse, as you said, and some of these pieces that have been overlooked, unjustly overlooked. Is it hard to strike that balance? I mean, did some of these programs, did they kind of fall into place much more easily, while others, you know, you were kind of having a harder time saying what's that missing piece, you know, no pun intended, but right. How do I really just put the final polish on this concert and bring it that sense of balance or this overall kind of musical arc?
You know, that's a great question. Let's see. For instance, looking at this particular upcoming season concerts, I don't know if there were I don't think it was a big of, you know, that big of a challenge. I think, you know, sometimes, you know, generally speaking, there are different ways one can approach programming a particular recital, a particular concert, orchestral concert. Do you go with the approach where, you know, the pieces or the, you know, you pair pieces that sort of naturally complement each other, you know, stylistically, musically, and so on? Or do you sometimes go for sort of the opposite? So you go for the pairing that is sort of, you know, brings out the contrast between the two particular pieces, or, you know, multiple pieces on the program. So you're kind of going for this. Not in some ways, it's almost like a roller coaster ride, you know, for a listener and those on stage. And, you know, both are valid. I think, you know, both are valid approaches. And I don't know, it just seems like sometimes it's, you know, sometimes what looks good on paper doesn't quite work out. or, you know, the opposite is true, right? So, you know, sometimes it looks really random on paper, and then, you know, turns out to be a very much a cohesive, like a musical evening. And it's, you know, it's much, to me, it's, I always compare it to a meal, you know, like a multi course dinner or something like that. And kind of, you know, thinking about sort of what is, you know, I mean, I always say meat and potatoes, but maybe in South Carolina it's really like shrimp and grits of, you know, so like the main staple that, you know, people love. And, you know, those anchors will definitely need to be there. And but then I'm always looking for ways to, you know, spice things up a little bit, right? And you know, along the way, you know, hopefully there are, you know, new discoveries for everybody, and make it interesting for everybody. And, you know, at the same time, pieces like, you know, Brahms' Fourth Symphony, or, you know, any of these, you know, Beethoven's Seventh, the pieces that are standard, and certainly everybody in our orchestra have played it multiple times on multiple occasions in the past. What's interesting, though, is that every time you come back to these pieces, you discover something new. And I think that's really the hallmark also of the pieces that, you know, the pieces that have withstood the test of time. And, you know, there's nothing routine about them, you know, hopefully. I mean, you know, if we are treating them with the same level of detail and same level of curiosity as we would approach an unfamiliar repertoire, then, you know, there certainly will be new discoveries, new ways of thinking about a well-known phrase, like the opening of the opening of Mozart's, you know, Symphony Number 40, for instance. So that's, you know, that's sort of, I guess, I don't know if I actually answered the question on that, but that's sort of my, you know, basic philosophy or basic challenge, you know, whenever you're creating a concert program. And then when we are planning a season, then there is a, you know, there is a usually sort of a consideration as to how does the whole season, the entire six concert season, you know, is there a certain shape, certain arc to the way the whole season works? And, you know, in that regard, you know, as we mentioned earlier, I mean, for this season, it's sort of, you know, it's sort of, we end big is the basic mantra for the season, in, you know, for safety reasons or for the pandemic reasons, you know. But there are always, you know, things that go into different, you know, consideration when, you know, when we're putting things together. I don't like to repeat as much of something either a piece I've done somewhere else within the last couple of years. So, you know, sometimes that kind of goes into a consideration. Like if I had done something like Tchaikovsky Fifth or something, where I've done that a couple of times in other places. So maybe, you know, I want to take a little moratorium from that piece for a year or two. And, you know, yeah, so there's always consideration like that. You know, what has the orchestra played recently? Are there composers whose music that we haven't done as much and we should, for purposes of, you know, improving an ensemble, improving, you know, helping us grow as an orchestra. So, like, for instance, the Mendelssohn Symphony is a part of that conversation. So yeah, so there, you know, so you can pick any program, and that's probably true with any orchestra, any conductor as well, and, you know, kind of go into a deep dive as to like why each piece is there, why the particular pairing, you know, that sort of thing. You know, why does it fall? Why does this particular concert fall in January as opposed to March? You know, that sort of thing. So,
sure. Well, I mean, aside from, I guess, all the tremendous thought that went into this, on a pure kind of gut level reaction, feeling level, what piece on this lineup has you the most excited?
What piece? One piece?
Well, give me a top three, maybe, if you must.
Three? Oh, man, this is, you're making it difficult. Just kidding. Let's see. Well, I have mentioned earlier the Afro-American Symphony by William Grant Still. So that's definitely one of the highlights for me. You know, we've done the Brahms Fourth, and I think it was like my second season or something. So in a sense, I'm looking forward to kind of revisiting the Brahms Fourth with this orchestra, because it was like 10 years ago. It was probably at least 10 years ago when we did it last together. So it's, you know, it's always great to come back to a great romantic symphony like that, after a few years, to see sort of a gauge of where we are. You know, where we are as an orchestra, how we communicate with each other between the conductor and the orchestra, and among the musicians themselves. And, you know, I always feel like the Brahms symphonies are really, you know, it's chamber music that's written on a big scale for many people. And so there are certainly a lot of challenges. And, you know, I have a feeling that it's going to be, you know, quite a different kind of experience than it was 10 years ago. That was early on in our relationship, in our partnership. And so, you know, to come back to a piece after, you know, having gone through a lot of different pieces together and sort of, you know, hope, you know, and I think our relationship has deepened. So it's, you know, it'll be a good way to kind of gauge that, and also gauge, okay, so then, you know, we can now do this. You know, what's the next level? It's also going to present us with those kind of opportunities as well. And personally, I'm looking forward to, for me, it's revisiting the piece, but I haven't done this piece with the orchestra in South Carolina. It's the Barber Violin Concerto. I just love the lyricism and the virtuosity of that piece. And again, it's a piece that, you know, I haven't had the chance to program in Colombia for a long time. So, you know, kind of looking forward to kind of finally be able to do that piece together. So that's your three.
Well, thanks for, humoring me there and making decision to pick those final few. I mean, sounds like a really exciting season planned with the SC Philharmonic. And I'll be keeping my fingers crossed that, you know, everything goes as smoothly as this lingering pandemic allows. And certainly all best to you and the orchestra for the 2021-2022 season.
Thank you so much.
Part of a conversation I had with Morihiko Nakahara, music director of the South Carolina Philharmonic. The orchestra's 2021-2022 Masterworks series gets underway Saturday evening with a concert at the Koger Center in Columbia, featuring works by Felix and Fanny Mendelssohn, Andrea Gabrielli, and Antonio Vivaldi. More information at scphilharmonic.com. In full disclosure, the SC Philharmonic does provide financial support for South Carolina Public Radio. For South Carolina Public Radio and Sonatas and Soundscapes, I'm Bradley Fuller.